Welcome to episode 447 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, EW Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we feature a wonderful conversation with documentarian, podcast host and producer, archivist, and old soul, Dominique Lessing. We talk with Dominique about her story, so to speak, up to this point, about Prince Grace of Monaco, about Barbara Carroll working at MoMA, and her new job in Pittsburgh as an archivist, film archivist, her grandma, glamour, Dinah Shore, quiet strength, style, feeling disconnected from your own generation, about being an old soul, and following your dreams, among other things. A wonderful conversation with Dominique Lessing this go-round. We feature an EW essay titled Flair, and we share a piece written by Ellery Akers titled 15 Strokes of Luck, published in the December 2021 edition of The Sun magazine. We have a poem called Thankful, and of course, all of this will be infused, imbued with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It's so nice to be with you. Let's get to it. Episode 447 of Troubadours and Raconteurs. Are they all mentally and spiritually lost? Have we all become defective? Has our sense of style and glamorous humility left us? Have you ever heard of the princess from Philadelphia Grace Kelly, or beautiful RuPaul and Candy Darling. Gregory Peck was a handsome man who had a swagger that is keenly apparent still on the big and small screen. Sidney Poitier, his name alone is so elegant. What about the jazz musicians from the 20th century with suits and ties, debonair hats and long overcoats to match their ivory, gold, silver, dark varnished wood and brass, creating sound so vibrant, deep and soulful, its inspiration lasts beyond the bombast, society stoked as the energy causing its creation. Is not the way we trim our beard and mustache, pluck our eyebrows and make longer our eyelash, the fact that we wear a slip under our dinner dress or a tie clip and fine leather shoes with a matching belt and silk stockings, an effort at kicking the blues? We appreciate a classy turn of phrase, a hero or heroine breaking through the haze of a gathering malaise. Are not these a means to transcend emptiness and despondency? We love to be strong and romantic, with delusions of self-importance sometimes leading to grandeur, though our essence can best be described and genuinely expressed by the way in which we choose to meander.
Fall in love, says my heart. Take a chance on romance, says my heart. But each time that I'm almost in your arms, this traumatic brain of mine keeps ringing in false alarms. Then my head rules instead and I'm wise to the scheme of that gleam in your eyes. So I kiss and run, but the moment we're apart, you fool, that was love, says my heart.
Dominique Lessing, is this you?
It is. It's so nice to hear you.
Same here. Thank you for being on Troubadours and Rock On Tours.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And
I'm very excited.
I could tell. Before we get started, I just want to share a little bit about, and you're going to fill in a lot, I think, too. Dominique is a documentarian. She's a podcast producer and host. She's an archivist and an old soul, among other things, right?
That's right.
And tell us a little bit about your story, I guess you could say, so to speak, to give folks context before we get in.
Okay. I grew up here in Scranton, and I was around a lot of older people, and I think that's how I became an old soul. And I grew up here and with a lot of artists and really eclectic people, and that's kind of my start. And then I went to New York for college, and there I studied film and film studies, and then I got a great opportunity to work on archiving all of Princess Grace of Monaco, her collection in New York City. So I did that while I was in college, and that really got me into my love of archiving and film and all of that good stuff. And then I finished college there, and I stayed there, and I was working at Carnegie Hall and working for the Museum of Modern Art there in their film department, and that was really great. And then I came back here about 2.5 years ago, and that's been like my little journey so far.
And you're relatively young. I mean, mid-20s, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, and 27.
And I've known you. Yeah. I've known you since you're an infant.
It's
amazing.
It's really great. I really love, now that I'm back home, sometimes, you know, running into people who I've known for that long, and it's very special.
It is. And you're cool to appreciate that and see that already at 25. So, yeah, you are an old soul for sure. And now you went to Sarah Lawrence, is that right?
Mm-hmm. I did. And it was really exciting there. It was full of, it's not just an all-girls school, but it still has that aura to it because it used to be. And so there's a lot of very strong women there and really eclectic group there.
Well, I think it's safe to say your mom's a strong woman, so I guess that sort of sets the tone for you.
Yes, definitely. But it was very intimidating, I must say, because I would say that I'm a little bit not exactly the type of feminist that they all were. They're very loud and domineering, and so it was very interesting being there and trying to figure out, well, how can I be me there? And so it was really great. I really encourage people who are a little different in what they like to explore that in places that might make them feel a little uncomfortable, you know, at first.
Yeah, that's a great bit of advice. You know, it helps you to push yourself and also,
yes,
you know, get maybe into things that you really want to, but you don't have the chutzpah yet. And that kind of scene almost forces you, or it inspires you both to get moving in a way. Now, I called you a documentarian. Is that accurate? Or you studied film, but are documentaries more...
Yes. Well, I helped the documentarian a great deal. I'm not the actual documentarian, but I, as an archivist, I give the documentarian their work so that they can make the film they want to make. So all of the film clips you would see in a film, they have to get that from somewhere. So they get that from usually the places that I've been grateful to work at, and we supply them with the films, different ones, and then they kind of choose what they want, and then that's what you end up seeing in the film.
Now, a lot of people might say that sounds boring, being an archivist. You know, is it? I guess not for you.
Well, you have to really like it. Like, I get so excited. I knew it was a good fit when I was there, and they said, well, we have all of these photographs of these old movie stars, and we're not sure who they are. And I knew who they were. And I thought, well, you know, when I was 12, it didn't matter, but now it finally matters that I know who Gregory Peck is, or I know who, you know, Vincent Price is. It matters then. And so it's very exciting because I can use all this knowledge I've had finally at last.
Well, when you said when you were there, when you were at Carnegie Hall or MoMA, is that what you mean when you say
yes.
there?
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's my time, I just finished working at MoMA and at their archive, which is here in the Poconos. So I was there for close to a year, and that's where I was able to use a lot of my skills.
So when you were a little girl, you watched a lot of old movies, black and white movies and such?
Yes. Definitely. I had a huge obsession with it. I don't know why, but my father was definitely very instrumental in that, and he loved them, and so he got me very into them for a long period of time. And then I tried to be cool and be in with the other people at school and like what they liked, but it only really lasted like a couple years. And then by the time I was like 13, I started to just go back into them. And I'd go to the library and read, autobiographies on these movie stars. And just like I was completely, immersed in that since then.
What do you think compels you or attracts you to I guess we would say the mid 20th century, early 20th century, instead of more contemporary actors, actresses, and such.
I just think that they have. You don't know everything about them, which is very alluring to me. There's this beauty about them, and I also think that they're very interesting and smart, and the products that came out then were really innovative and different types of films. There was noir, there was drama and thrillers, all kinds, where now there's really just big budget films, like big blockbuster superhero films. But then you had so many musicals, all different kinds. So I really love that variety and they're just so, so glamorous, which we don't have today.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, I think that's true. I noticed that too. And I know for a while you were hanging out with this jazz musician, weren't you? Who was significantly older than you. When you were, I think, working on putting together a documentary about her.
Oh, yes, I was. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You want to tell us a little bit about that? Because that to me was pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, well, her name was Barbara Carroll, and I discovered her just randomly at a jazz club, and she happened to still be playing at 95 at the time. And I was in college, and I wanted to really do more documentary archival work. And so I thought, oh, wow, she's been playing piano, jazz piano, for the past, like 70 years it had been, and nobody had really talked about her except the New York scene really knew her. And so I asked her. I had known some other musicians who luckily got me her number, and I asked her if we could make a film about her, and she said yes, and I was starting to go to her apartment, and it was really incredible to see someone 95 playing, and she had pictures of different musicians in her home, so when you'd go in there, it just felt like this time capsule, of like the 50s there. And it was going really well. Unfortunately, she passed away, so we had to stop doing it. But for a good year, it was very exciting.
I mean, that sounds like paradise for you in a lot of ways, walking into her apartment.
It was. And just how she carried herself. I would watch like what she would wear and just all these things. And I was about 21 at that time. And it was just so exciting.
She was 74 years older than you.
Yes, but I wanted her to be my best friend. Like I'm really not into ageism. That's something I tried to fight for a lot, is that, you should be able to be friends with anyone, even if they're older than you. So.
Oh, definitely. It's just, though, usually people have common interests when they're closer in age. They're in the same sort of phase in life. They're going through the same sorts of things in life. So I think that's often why people of the same age seem to gather and are attracted to being together. But, you know, I remember when I was young, my parents, in particular my father, would say, you should spend time with people older than you and talk with them. They have a lot to teach you. Listen to their stories. And, you know, I always thought that made sense. And I do that too. And so I kind of get maybe where you're coming from. It sounds like you're the style and is something that you like, but also I bet you, and tell me if I'm wrong, you're also enamored by their experience.
Oh yeah, and just how they carry themselves. You know, us young people are very nervous and like, what's going to happen next? And what am I doing? Am I doing it right? You know, we have all these, everything's very unknown, I feel, at least for me. And when I'm with especially older people, they have a confidence and a calmness that I really wish I had. And it's really nice to just, you know, be in their presence, I find. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense to me. And you know, we're going to talk about your podcast in a bit and your new job in Pittsburgh too. See what you're thinking about that set of opportunities. But I'd like to still ask you about some of the other friendships you have, because you have some really cool friendships, and this speaks to how cool you must be. I mean, I know you're cool, but I'm biased. like you hang out with the chairman of the board's daughter. Right?
Yep, I do. I keep it on the down low, but I do occasionally. Yeah, she's a really, really great person. And had I not been an old soul or someone into, you know, older things when I was younger, that wouldn't have happened, you know. So.
And we're talking about not the chairman of the board of, you know, some corporation. We're talking about... Frank Sinatra. We're talking about Nancy Sinatra. And how did you guys meet?
Well, when I was 14, I was researching him just for fun, and I discovered that he had a website, and I didn't think anything of it, and you could join it to learn more about him. And when I joined it, I learned that she was the one who ran the website and really ran it. Like, she was the one who would greet you on there, and nobody believed me about this. So, I mean, I joined, and I was constantly getting any questions I had, she answered them. And it was a whole, like a forum of people, but a pretty small group of people. And I was the only young person on there. So I kind of stuck out a bit. And, so I was on there since I was, you know, 14, and it just ended a year ago. It just the website got canceled, but she was like a really wonderful mentor on there. And then when she would come to New York, I would see her, and that was when I really realized that we got along very well. And I just instantly, like, I felt calm with her, and we were just, you know, very good friends. And I think of her as more like a great aunt, you know, someone who you can ask advice. And she's very practical, maybe the most practical person I know. So it's always really nice if I need advice about little things to go to her.
It's amazing. You know, you have so many good people in your life. You do. I mean, your mother and your father, they're very cool people. And then your grandma too, right? your paternal grandma. I know she was a strong, I don't know if she's still around. Excuse me for asking.
No, that's okay.
Is she still?
No, she isn't. But I had 10 really amazing years with her, and I'd say she's my favorite person, like, in the world. And I would say definitely that she made my dad so much of who he is, you know, who then made me, you know, what I believe in. And I definitely, she was a model for in the 40s, and then they lived in Manhattan with my father and her, and it was very interesting him telling me so many stories about living in New York City, you know, in the 50s and 60s and 70s. So I'm definitely very influenced by them.
And all of this experience, all of this knowledge that you're gathering, 25 years old. You're an archivist. You're a filmmaker. Where are you going from here? What are you going to do with all this? And how are you going to keep it? You know, are you going to? I guess as you get older, how is that going to work?
I don't know. I hope in all good ways. I mean, I'm trying to just make sure I do things that I really love to do, and that I think are of my interest, maybe not other people's, but, you know, and that I can combine making an actual living with doing something I really, you know, find important. So if I can just keep doing that.
Well, what do you find important? I mean, are you trying to help to frame and to keep track of what has occurred that you believe is important through film, through, I guess, culture that is passed on, ideas, style, or are you trying to create or come across something totally new? I'm trying to understand. I mean, you are an artist, obviously, and I'm trying to understand in what way and what you're going to do with it.
I'd say it's more about the people I choose. I'm very specific about the, in terms of my own projects, like who I want to focus on. And they're normally people that maybe other people just didn't realize are that fabulous. And I'm like, but they really are. And you're just not noticing it because they have a quieter demeanor, or they all seem to come off in a very elegant, warm way, but not in an in-your-face way. So that makes people kind of forget about you, unfortunately. So I try to bring those, if I can always try to bring those people to the surface, that would be my greatest, you know, goal.
And could they be everyday people? Are they going to be?
Oh, definitely. I mean, in my personal life, having those people as friends, yes. But I mean, in work, I would love to just find those different artists I find really exciting that others just don't seem to, and highlight them.
Are they usually, would you say they're usually eccentric kind of, in the would be looked at as eccentric from, you know, normative?
No, not at all.
No?
No, not at all. They all seem to have a thread of being just people that are not in your face, but are iconic in some way, like why I chose Dinah Shore, why I've been always interested in Doris Day. It's like these women who have this quiet strength about them, but they're not, you know, they're not like Gloria Steinem out there, but they have all those beliefs, but they just show it in a very subtle way.
Now, you mentioned Dinah Shore, and this is a nice transition into your podcast, which is called An Old Soul, and right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
You did an episode on Dinah, and you basically tell us about the podcast. It's relatively new, right? And how does it work? What do you, in other words, you know, what would people, what should they expect?
Oh, I'm so excited about it. It's actually going to be a whole series of episodes, and I've done two of them so far. And it's on the life of Dinah Shore, who was a singer and a television host for many, many decades. And she also did a lot for women's sports, which people don't remember. So it's taking all of these, her whole life, and really going in depth with it, which hasn't really been done before, and doing that in a podcast format.
So is it you discussing with other people various aspects of whomever you're focusing on life, or is it you just sharing your thoughts and research?
Well, I use all of my archival skills, and I do very, very heavy, intense research, and I go to archives. I'm planning to go to her archive, which is in Nashville, and I do a lot of research on the person, so on Dinah Shore. And then what I do is I use a lot of audio and different clips from her life from television, since she worked primarily in TV. And I use a lot of that as kind of the evidence of what I'm saying. So I try to make it incredibly factual. So a lot of it is in her own words. So I'm able to take so much of my archival deep dive, you know, skills and bring that to the podcast. So it's not a conversation at all. It's more kind of the archive coming to life is what I hope it is.
That sounds wonderful. This sounds like it could be huge. Honestly, it sounds very, it sounds like it'd be very, very entertaining and stimulating to listen to, honestly. Much more than my show.
Sure. No, it all matters.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
Yeah, it is. Everybody likes different stuff, and but yeah. Honestly, this sounds wonderful. And 30 minutes, 60 minutes per episode, or is it going to vary?
Yep, it's about 35 minutes per episode, and there'll probably be around 10 of them. I have two of them that are out right now.
10 of them for just Dinah, you mean?
Yep, just Dinah. Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you're done, or you're going into somebody else?
No, I might do someone else. I might do Mary Tyler Moore after her. But I'm not sure quite yet, so we'll have to see. And that would be in the springtime.
And is it always going to be a woman?
For right now, but I'm more drawn to women, but there are some men that I've now recently discovered that I'm trying to find people where there isn't too much that's been out on them already. So a lot of male stars, there actually has been a lot about them out. So that can be a little difficult, I find.
Yeah, yeah. And again, this is called An Old Soul, and it could be found anywhere.
Yes, it's, Such an Old Soul, and it's anywhere you have podcasts.
Such an Old Soul. I knew I was forgetting
such
a word.
Such an Old Soul, yeah.
Such an Old Soul.
No
problem. And this is, I mean, that's a reference to you.
Yes, because everybody would tell me that, and I didn't understand, and then I looked it up, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's true. Yeah.
So, you're such an old soul, and you are using everything that you've experienced up to this point. It seems to me you're very open and you remember, and you seem positive too, to me, your take on life. Like right now, when you look, how do you connect with your own generation? Do you, or is that, is that difficult? The other 20 somethings.
Yeah. No, it's very hard, I think. Very difficult. But I am good at not, like, I definitely am not overt with all the things that I love. I'm not ramming it down people's, you know, throat and being like, watch this, look at this star, look at, you know, I think that I'm pretty subtle about it. Like, you'd have to ask me to know that what I'm into. So I think that helps a lot. Where, you know, anyone can kind of go up to me and I can talk to them and they're not going to be like, wow, she's really far out where I don't know how to relate to her. Like, I try to, you know, be able to, like, I know what's going on in the world. Like, I'm not just set in 1960, you know, so, which I think once people get to know me, they think that's true. But I mean, I'm able to have just a general conversation where I do find that some people who I do get to know who are really thickly in this world, whether it be old film or vintage fashion or whatever, that some of them have a really, really hard time relating to other people because they just want to be in that world, you know, but so I think you have to understand it's a real balance, you know.
Right, right. You can appreciate other things, but still be here now. You know.
Oh, yeah.
Things that,
yeah. And be interested in what other people are interested. Like, I love meeting someone new and knowing what they are interested in and hearing about that. Like, that's very exciting. And it doesn't need to just all be about, like, you know, the old stuff I like. So.
Yeah, you're not obsessed.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, your style, your clothes, do you dress like someone from the 50s and 60s or earlier, or do you dress pretty like your contemporaries?
Yeah, I'd say it's a blend. Like, I pick up pieces that are, but I blend it with newer pieces, similar to how I would converse with someone. Like, you know, I do love to talk about older things, but I can talk about current stuff. So it's like that with clothes. I do really, really love late 60s clothes just because they're a shorter cut. And since I'm very tiny, it goes well for me. But I'd say someone looking at me wouldn't go, oh, wow, she only wears, you know, dated clothes. So,
yeah. And I think a lot of the styles you like are based on what I have seen are timeless anyway, really.
You know? Exactly. That's what I hope. Yeah. You can wear it when you're 90, when you're 20.
Right. So you're moving to Pittsburgh. It's kind of like Mary, you know, Mary Tyler Moore.
Yes, I know. She's my hero right now. I'm really channeling a lot of her energy.
Well, tell us about it. What's on your mind? How are you looking at this? You're going there for a new job as an archivist.
Yes. Uh-huh. My first job as a real archivist, because I have spent many years working for free, interning, and I've never been so excited that I actually have a real job. And I'm sure many people my age feel that way, but especially in my field, I was talking to a fellow archivist who has a job in it already, and she agreed that it's just so hard to get in the door because these places are so hard to find, and then they're very secure, like people don't know they exist. So once you do, then just getting in the door and being able to just intern somewhere is so hard. So I've been interning for a long time at the Museum of Modern Art, and they weren't able to give me a job there. So I was able to luckily find one at a film archive in Pittsburgh. So that's why I'm moving there.
What's the name of the place?
It's called the Media Preserve.
And is it a nonprofit or is it a for-profit or?
It's for-profit. But they actually deal with, they have many departments, so they deal with books, audio, they do VHS, and then like all types of film, which is the department I'm in. So basically their whole motto is taking the past and making it present. So they take all forms of anything old and they make it digital so that you can see it in today's world.
And you're fine with that?
Yes. Oh, that's all I want is for people to get to, because we don't destroy anything, but it's the ability to get to see something from the 30s right now in you know, pristine color is very exciting, or else it's just sitting in a vault, you know. So
have you ever talked with Nick Pavisa about this?
I haven't. Maybe I should.
Maybe you should, yeah. Yeah. I think Nick and you would have a very fascinating conversation about that topic. I've had some conversations with him about it, and unless I misunderstood him, I think he would take a different point of view than you. Maybe we should have both of you on. I can mediate.
Think so. Yes. Well, I really strongly just disagree with people who want to colorize things. Like, I'm not doing anything where we're not taking any of the film and making it different. We're just taking, it's the exact film you would see. It's just going into a scanner, and then when it comes out, you get a copy of it on digital, but it looks exactly the same. But what a lot of people are doing now is they're taking film and colorizing it or changing it in a way, taking out scenes because of the climate of today or whatever. And that's what we don't do there.
Well, that's good. That's good. I'm not judging.
Yeah.
Believe me, I'm not. I'm just
no.
All
we do is make it accessible to people. So, like, you want to see Lawrence of Arabia, you don't have a whole film reel of it because you don't have a film, you know, projection screen at your home. Well, we make it so you can buy the DVD, basically. So.
Excellent. Excellent. And this is important.
Yeah.
This is important because it's human culture.
Yes. And it's not sitting there in the vault, you know, because I was at an archive where all I did was take things and put it back in a box and mark it and then put it in a vault. And that's all I did all day. But nobody got to see it, where this work I'll be doing, everything I do, at least hopefully at some point, you will get to see it. So whether it's in a documentary or at a library.
Well, Dominique, I look forward to seeing a lot of what you do in the future, including your own films that I'm sure you're going to direct, produce, what have you. I cannot wait to start listening to Such an Old Soul, your new podcast, and hopefully we see each other out and about town during the holidays. Thank you so much for being on Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Any parting words for the listeners?
Just be true to yourself. I strongly believe that.
I love it.
Thank you. And watch some good old movies. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you, Dominique. Bye.
You're welcome. Bye.
Close and hold me tight. Hold me now while my head seems light. Thrills like this linger so when I hear them play dancero. If I dream of new delights, it's a part of this night of nights. And while I feel this glow, let them play and play dancero. In my heart I know that if I've heard one tune, I've heard a thousand things. But still and all I find, there's only one that thrills me to extremes. Here before my very I could swear this is paradise. This is all mine, I know. When I hear them play dancero, my very eyes, I could swear this is paradise. This is all mine, I know. When I hear them play dancero, when I hear them play dancero.
And now a piece written by Ellery Akers, published in the December 2021 edition of the Sun magazine. It's titled, 15 Strokes of Luck. The first was that I was no longer in pain. I could sleep. The second was that I was finally able to love. All my life, I had been more or less shut. The third was that I lived near a pond. Watching the mallards dunk made me laugh. I was happy looking at dragonflies and even their empty exoskeletons, their shells shaking a little in the wind. The fourth was that sometimes I felt rinsed clean and at peace. The fifth was that sometimes, not often, I knew when I was locked into my story. The sixth was that I didn't die young. Locked into that story. I knew I wasn't the only one who had a violent father. The seventh was that I was interested in pebbles, lichens, and sticks, which were everywhere. The eighth was my group of friends, Barbara, Shirley, Jerry, Judith, Bonnie, Mario, Mia, Eric, and Angelique. The ninth was writing. The tenth was that I didn't want to be a torch, but a candle. The 11th was that I could see a stripe of light on an alder trunk and draw it. And even though it might not turn out to be a good drawing, I noticed the forest. The 12th was that I could see a therapist who walked me to the door and said, "I hope things are better next week." The 13th was that I lived close enough to the sea to smell it. The 14th was that when he stroked my hair, all the cells on my head lit up with delight, one after another. The 15th was my dreams. They told me to start teaching. They told me to go north. They told me not to drive the next day. They told me who loved me. They were never wrong. Thankful. The smell of stuffing and wine, ginger ale and figs, with incense, sandalwood, in the rugs and upholstery. A light dusting of snow outside the window, and warm waves of heat from the clinking radiator pumped up with steam from a furnace down below. The sun rises and sets with skyscape clouds swirl, turmeric, magenta, orange, yellow hues as a tint of gray-white billows. Such natural clarity, nothing confused, true elegance for all to freely wear and peruse.
Autumn in New York, why does it seem so inviting? Autumn in New York, it spells the thrill of first nighting. Glittering crowds and shimmering clouds in canyons of steel, they're making me feel I'm home. It's autumn in New York that brings the promise of new love. Autumn in New York is often mingled with pain. Dreamers with empty hands may sigh for exotic lands. It's autumn in New York. It's good to live it again. Autumn in New York, the gleaming rooftops at sundown. Autumn in New York, it lifts you up when you're run down. Jaded ways and gay divorces who lunch at the Ritz will tell you that it's divine. This autumn in New York transforms the slums into Mayfair. Autumn in New York, you'll need no castle in Spain. Love us that bless the dark on benches in Central Park. Greet autumn in New York. It's good to live in
And there you have it, episode 447 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Dominique Lessing, The Sun Magazine, writer Ellery Akers, and these musical artists: Thelonious Monk, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, Jackie and Roy, Doris Day, Nick Lowe, Billie Holiday, Branford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard, too. And of course, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care. Happy Thanksgiving.
Love is all around, why don't you take it all?